This is a recording of From the East to the West, The Problem of Directions in the Book of Mormon by Brant A. Gardner, originally published in Interpreter, A Journal of Mormon Scripture, Volume 3, 2013, pages 119 through 153, read by Scott Dunaway. This audio recording is copyrighted under a Creative Commons license and may be freely distributed if it remains unchanged, the journal and its website are credited, and is for non-commercial use. A printed version of this and many other articles and resources on Mormon scripture can be found at mormoninterpreter.com. Abstract. The 1985 publication of John L. Sorensen's An Ancient American Setting for the Book of Mormon presented the best argument for a New World location for the Book of Mormon. For all of its strengths, however, one aspect of the model has remained perplexing. It appeared that in order to accept that correlation, one must accept that the Nephites rotated north to what we typically understand as northwest. The internal connections between text and geography were tighter than any previous correlation, and the connections between that particular geography and the history of the peoples who lived in that place during Book of Mormon times was also impressive. There was just that little problem of north not being north. This paper re-examines the Book of Mormon directional terms and interprets them against the cultural system that was prevalent in the area defined by Sorensen's geographical correlation. The result is a way to understand Book of Mormon directions without requiring any skewing of magnetic north. In 1985, John L. Sorensen published An Ancient American Setting for the Book of Mormon. That book was the culmination of decades of work establishing a real-world setting that plausibly fit the textual geography of the Book of Mormon. Sorensen's model places the Book of Mormon in part of the region known as Mesoamerica, extending from perhaps a little south of modern Guatemala to somewhat north of the Isthmus of Tehuantepec. In addition to his work on the geography, Sorensen expanded his correlation to include the relationship between the available historical and cultural information for that region and the descriptions and events in the Book of Mormon. The correlations were impressive and have led to further productive investigation. In spite of the many reasons that recommend this model, there is one major problem with the correlation. Dean G. Matheny, a lawyer with a Ph.D. in anthropology from the University of Utah, explains, quote, "The most fundamental geographical problem associated with Sorensen's model has to do with issues of directionality. In order for this model to fit the geography of Mesoamerica, one must assume that the Nephites had a system of directions with cardinal directions skewed 45 degrees or more off the usually observed cardinals. In other words, the whole directional card must be shifted more than 60 degrees to the west for this model to fit the geography of the chosen area. Otherwise, as Vogel has pointed out, the land north will be on the west, and the south on the east, and so forth. Making this shift in directions creates its own set of problems, however, because in such a Nephite directional system, the sun would come up in the south and set in the north." End quote. These are serious considerations. How could Nephites possibly think that the sun would come up in the south and set in the north? They couldn't. Yet, we have a geographic correlation that fits both real-world geography and cultural history remarkably well, except when we come to the terms north, south, east, and west. I propose that if Mesoamerica is a good fit for the Book of Mormon's real-world geography, then information about Mesoamerica must be used to re-examine and refine the nature of that fit. In short, an understanding of the Mesoamerican directional system offers an explanation for the way that Book of Mormon directions correspond to that geography without recourse to an artificial shift in the directions. The Mesoamerican directional system. Scholars have found a very similar directional system among the various Mesoamerican cultures. Much of the data from the Maya cultures, because the ability to translate the carved and painted text provides a unique view of pre-contact culture currently available for any Mesoamerican people. Nevertheless, what may be more carefully worked out in the Maya data has sufficient corroboration in data from other cultures to depict an essentially pan-Mesoamerican orientation system. The Mesoamerican system is not a replica of our Western understanding of cardinal directions, even though it is often described using Western directional terms. While both systems are used to describe the real world and share some base characteristics, there is an incomplete overlap in meaning between the two systems. That incomplete overlap in meaning is too often hidden when we use the terms from the Western system of cardinal directions to describe the Mesoamerican system. To begin with, unlike our four cardinal directions, the Mesoamerican system have had five, quote, directions, end quote. Four have similarities to our north, south, east, and west, but the fifth direction was the center, which has no Western counterpart. To our Western understanding, the center doesn't seem like a direction, but it was nevertheless a very important part of the Mesoamerican method of orientation in the world. David Friedel, professor of archaeology at Washington University in St. Louis, and Linda Scale, professor in art at the University of Texas, described this concept for the Maya. Quote, just as the gods marked the periphery by placing the four sides and corners around the center, the Maya shaman creates a five-part image to sanctify space and open a portal to the other world. Mayanists have adopted the word, the Latin word, quincunx, for this five-point plan concept. Although the Maya have many ways of expressing it, it is in their own languages. The discerning of the four sides or the four corners of the establishing of their position relative to the center point is what we mean by centering. The Yucatec farmers today center their fields ritually even before they begin to cut them out of the fallow brushland. They mark off their fields and the units within them with small piles of stones, just as villages mark off their lands from those of neighboring communities with large piles of stones, end quote. For Westerners, the very idea of a, quote, direction, end quote, almost implies movement. Our system tells us where we are headed. The Mesoamerican system helped people define where they were. From small to large or large to small, Mesoamerican people centered themselves, their homes, and their cities at the crossroads of the world. Mary Miller, professor of history of art at Yale, and Carl Taub, associate professor in the Department of Anthropology at the University of California, Riverside, described the way that the five-part concept influenced multiple levels of the Mesoamerican world. Quote, one of the underlying organizational principles of the Mesoamerican religion is replication, in which essential patterns of everyday life and the surrounding world are copied and incorporated as models of religious thought and action. Basic features of the social world are often repeated on an increasingly larger scale to encompass the world and the workings of the universe. For example, in the Maya region, the house with its four walls and corner posts could stand for a maize field, the community, and the structure of the cosmos. Grand and abstract concepts are placed in human terms, and conversely, the ordered structure of the universe serves to sanctify and validate human social conventions. End quote. There was no universal center. Each city was its own world, its own center. Each family home replicated the world and placed that family at its center. For Mesoamerican cultures, direction was equally symbolic as descriptive. Not only does, quote, the center direction, end quote, differ from our Western understanding, even the Mesoamerican directions that roughly correspond to our north, south, east, and west were differently conceived. Susan Milbrath, affiliate professor of anthropology at the University of Florida, describes the Mesoamerican mode of orientation using a Maya community as her example. Quote, analysis of Chamula astronomical concepts indicates that the primary axis is an east-west direction based on the sun's daily path. Even though they recognize that the zenith position is overhead, the east is visualized as the up direction and the west as down." End quote. A universal aspect of Mesoamerican directional systems is that they are based on the path of the sun. They encode that path throughout the year, tracing the shifting, rising, and setting of the sun from solstice to solstice. Western cardinal directions are conceptually A+, with each direction directly and cleanly associated with the pure direction, equidistant from all other directions. The Mesoamerican system, on the other hand, is better represented in the form of an X. East is not aligned toward the sun at the equinox, but the entire wedge created by tracing the passage of the sun along the horizon from solstice to solstice from the center. Archaeologist Prudence M. Rice puts it clearly, quote, "Maya quadripartite organization of horizontal space is not strictly based on the four fixed cardinal directions recognized in the modern world. Instead, the divisions seem to invoke the solstice equinox positions and movements of the sun as it rises on the eastern horizon and sets on the western," end quote. Although the plausible origin of this conception is the travel of the sun along the horizon, Mesoamerican systems regularize their depictions, and therefore their perceptions, into a quadripartite system surrounding the center. The world was depicted as a square with lines drawn from corner to corner. The Codex Mendoza shows the Aztec capital city at the center of the world. Tenochtitlan, indicated by the eagle on the cactus, the symbol for Tenochtitlan, sits as the center of the crossed lines that extend from each corner of the cosmos to the opposite corner. While the five-part concept defined the understanding of one's orientation in the cosmos, the actual directional system appears to have been built on a single direction, which was the path of the sun throughout the day and throughout the year. Other spatial relationships were made against that defining axis. Steven Pinker, professor of psychology at Harvard University, provides some interesting background on this terminological problem. His emphasis was on understanding how the brain encodes meaning rather than anything to do with geography, but the example is informative. Quote, "A set of studies by the anthropologist Stephen Levinson and his colleagues aim to show that a language's spatial terms determine how its speaker used the three dimensions of space to remember the locations of objects. Levinson's group examined Tetzal, a language spoken in the Chiapas region of Mexico. Tetzal has no general words for left or right. The closest it has are terms for the left or right arm or leg, but the terms are rarely used to refer to the left side of an object, table, or room. Instead, the Tetzal speakers describe spatial arrangements relative to the mountain slopes that dominates their villages. The spatial vocabulary of Tetzal includes words that mean up the slope, which is roughly southward, down the slope, roughly northward, and across the slope. These coordinates are used not just when traipsing up and down the mountain, but also when on flat terrain or indoors, and even when describing the arrangements of small objects. According to Levinson, Tetzal speakers, quote, "the spoon is downslope of the teacup," end quote, not "the spoon," quote, "the spoon is on the right side of the teacup," end quote. We should not assume that Tetzal speakers don't understand right and left. They certainly do. They simply use different terminology to describe those spatial relationships. What Pinker didn't know was that the upslope-downslope spatial orientation was repeated in their concept of world directions. Upslope-downslope are not only terms that Tetzal used in instead of left-right, but are also used instead of south-north. The Tetzal conceive of the east-west axis as the critical directions for orientation. Upslope, left and south, and downslope, right and north, are simply the same terms they would use for anything else that is spatially oriented against the main reference, the sun in the case of directions, or the human body in the case of the location of the spoon in the cup. They are not precisely terms for north or south, but spatial orientation against a reference position. David Stewart of the Peabody Museum at Harvard University analyzed two Maya glyphs and argued for their meaning as right and left by noting their visual associations with other glyphs typically given as south and north. He concludes, quote, "As students of Maya cosmology have often noted, the sun's path defines the principal axis of the universe, with its right and left determining the perpendicular axis that corresponds to our north and south. In Chamula and other Maya communities, the celestial sides are perceived from the sun's own perspective." End quote. This idea is corroborated by a larger study of directional terms in various Mesoamerican languages. Nicholas A. Hopkins, visiting instructor at the Centro de Estudios Mayos, Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México, and J. Catherine Yosarand, research associate, Pre-Columbian Art Research Institute, found a general agreement in vocabulary for east and west that was related to the path of the sun. They noted, quote, "Terms for north and south are much more elusive. First, there are far fewer reports of these terms. Second, there are no consistent patterns in the nomenclature. Many languages have no recorded terms for north and south, even when east and west are noted," end quote. They concluded, quote, "The extreme chaos of terms for north and south reinforces the idea that these directions are almost irrelevant. Directional orientation is based on the movements of the sun east to west, and the other two directions are of lesser importance. How then do we derive the system of four directions that is recorded in the village barrios regional states and other matters? The solution seems to be, as Karen Bassi has argued, that east and west are not directions at all, but are broad quadrants of the sky centered on, but not limited to, the cardinal directions east and west. East is the entire section of the horizon where the sun rises during the year from solstice to solstice and back again. This quadrant is represented in site layout by the E-group complexes found at Uaxactun and elsewhere. West is the corresponding quadrant where the sun is observed to set. North and south are simply the quadrants that lie between these two, that lie at the sides of the sky, to the right hand or to the left. That is, two defined quadrants imply two others, giving a total of four. The four corners of the Maya world are simply the limits of the east-west quadrants and do not imply four cardinal directions." End quote. Hopkins and Yosarand report an interesting example of what happened when an informant was asked to give the word for north. The Tojalabal speaker, a Mayan language, did not provide a word, but rather a definition. Quote, "We are looking north when we stand with our left hand toward where the sun goes down." End quote. There was no north in the Mesoamerican system, only a spatial relationship to that side of the sun's path. That is why the vocabulary varies so greatly. It wasn't that Mesoamericans didn't know where north was, they conceived it and described it entirely differently. It existed only as a quadrant on the right or left of the sun's path. Some Mesoamerican cultures called it right and some left. It is both interesting and important to note that Mesoamericans were not the only peoples to use left-right rather than specific names for directions. William J. Hamblin, professor of history at Brigham Young University, notes, quote, "The Hebrews, like most Semitic peoples, oriented themselves by facing east toward the rising sun. Thus, east in Hebrew was simply front, with south as right, north as left, and west as rear, or sea. The Egyptians oriented themselves by facing south, towards the source of the Nile. One of the terms for south in Egyptian is also a term for face. The usual word for north is probably related to a word which means the back of the head. The word for east is the same as for left, and west is the same as for right." End quote. One need not assume any linguistic connection between the Middle Eastern and Mesoamerican languages to account for the similarities. Using the body as the directional model from an accepted focal point is easily seen as an independent invention. For both Middle Eastern and Mesoamerican terminology, directional terms were created based upon a particular orientation of the body. So where is Mesoamerican North? Perhaps the most important indication of the difference between our modern Western perception of directions and that of the Mesoamerican cultures is our present persistent desire to find north. It likely reflects our reliance on the compass pointing to north, but is buttressed by our familiarity with maps that conventionally place north at the top. Thus, we understand where we are on a map when we can find north and place the map into its proper relationship with the land around us. For the Mesoamericans, the question would be, where is east? And the answer was determined by the sun. What was in the east could range from solstice to solstice, but it could also be rectified to the central point. Even though that might lie in the east, or on the north, could fall into a quadrant emanating from the center point. It could also be standardized into the average between the two. When Mesoamerican cities were built, there was often an east-west road, also often intersected by a perpendicular north-south road. A road may be built only in one place, and the center point of the range of what was east or on the north was used. This is easily demonstrated in one of the early features of many Mesoamerican cities. It was a complex that has been called an E-group. Francisco Estrada Belli, visiting assistant professor at Boston University, specializing in Mesoamerican archaeology, describes this type of construction. Quote, E-groups are generally formed by a western pyramid with radial stairways to the west and an elongated platform with one or three small substructures on the east side of the plaza. Their name is derived from group E of Uaxactun, which was the first of this type to be recognized. The triadic groups are normally situated on an elevated platform and are formed by a main pyramidal temple flanked by two smaller ones facing each other, end quote. This platform was used as a marker for the passage of the sun along the horizon. Importantly, there is a central pyramid in the group. Thus, while Mesoamericans might comprehend a quadrant of the sky as east, they could, and did, use what we would see as cardinal directions to lay out cities according to those center points of the quadrant. The important concept for understanding directions in the Book of Mormon is that although Mesoamerican cultures could certainly find and use our cardinal points, their descriptions of personal orientation were given against the most obviously available spatial referent, the sun. That means that when describing the orientation of actions in the Book of Mormon, they would be referencing directions according to the location of the sun, which traveled along the horizon, rather than the fixed conceptual center point of its travel. Book of Mormon Directions in Translation. It is worth emphasizing that our Book of Mormon is the result of Joseph Smith's translation. The nature of that translation has been the subject of discussion among faithful scholars, with opinions ranging from Brigham H. Roberts' declaration that Joseph, quote, expressed the translation in such language as the prophet could command, end quote, to Royal Skousen's understanding that Joseph Smith precisely read a translation that had already been done and which appeared in some manner when using the interpreters. My own analysis of the available data is more in line with Roberts. In the case of Book of Mormon directions, I suggest that Joseph used common vocabulary to express the Book of Mormon system of spatial orientation, and that the perception of cardinal directions in the text is the result of the translation rather than the plate text. I also suggest that there are sufficient hints in the text to allow a reconstruction of that plate text system. Although we certainly find the words north, south, east, and west in the Book of Mormon, there is an important and very specific phrase that I believe replicates the essential Mesoamerican directional system, quote, from the east to the west, end quote. Against the background of Mesoamerican directions, it is a reasonable initial hypothesis that this phrase represents plate text terms that indicate the path of the sun. This phrase, implying solar movement, occurs 6 times. There is a single occurrence of, quote, from the west to the east, end quote, in 3 Nephi chapter 1, verse 17, and a 3 related phrases mentioning a sea. Helaman chapter 3, verse 8, quote, from the sea west to the sea east, end quote. Helaman chapter 4, verse 7, quote, from the west sea even unto the east, end quote. Helaman chapter 11, verse 20, quote, from the sea west to the sea east, end quote. Importantly, all but one of these, Helaman chapter 4, verse 7, come in the context of an expression of the, quote, whole earth, end quote. Quote, and they began to know that the Son of God must shortly appear, yea, in fine, all the people upon the face of the whole earth, from the west to the east, both in the land north and in the land south, were so exceedingly astonished that they fell to the earth. 3 Nephi chapter 1, verse 17. And it came to pass that they did multiply and spread, and did go forth from the land southward to the land northward, and did spread insomuch that they began to cover the face of the whole earth, from the sea south to the sea north, from the sea west to the sea east. Helaman chapter 3, verse 8. And thus it did come to pass that the people of Nephi began to prosper again in the land, and began to build up their waste places, and began to multiply and spread, even until they did cover the whole face of the land, both on the northward and on the southward, from the sea west to the sea east. Helaman chapter 11, verse 20, end quote. Helaman chapter 4, verse 7 has a different context that appears to describe an intended direction rather than a generalization. Quote, and there they did fortify against the Lamanites, from the west sea even unto the east, it being a day's journey for a Nephite on the line which they had fortified and stationed their armies to defend their north country. End quote. This may be a counter indication, or it may be a requirement of the more specific starting point of the sea west rather than the indeterminate, quote, unto the east, end quote, which does not specify the ending point. Although the from to construction implies movement, most of the cases of from the east west to the east do not come in connection with any movement, but rather with descriptions of the face of the whole earth. With only 3 examples, it is a weak hypothesis, but I suggest that there was a literary reversal used in describing the whole earth. I believe that by reversing the known path of the sun, it placed the face of the whole earth firmly in the metaphorical rather than the physical realm. In contrast to the movement implied when using the phrase from the east to the west, the common usage of the other 2 directions is on the north, on the south. There are no instances of from the north to the south or from the south to the north, except in Helaman chapter 3, verse 8, dealing with the whole earth rather than directions. For example, Alma chapter 46, verse 17, quote, and it came to pass that when he had poured out his soul to God, he named all the land which was south of the land desolation, yea, and in fine all the land, both on the north and on the south, a chosen land and the land of liberty. End quote. Hopkins and Joserland report that many of the languages they surveyed use terms such as on the left or on the right to designate north and south, where the Mesoamerican cultures used the terms such as on the right, on the left, or some other spatial indicator, as the upslope, downslope of the textal. The Book of Mormon translation supplies the words north-south. Although the specific word comes from Joseph's Western understanding, the words are couched in phrases that replicate the functional relationships of the Mesoamerican system. The Book of Mormon Vocabulary of Spatial Orientation also replicates the four quarters assigned to east-west and the sides of the sky we know as north and south. In Mosiah chapter 27, verse 6, we find, quote, "And there began to be much peace again in the land, and the people began to be very numerous, and began to scatter abroad upon the face of the earth, yea, on the north and on the south, on the east and on the west, building large cities and villages in all quarters of the land." End quote. Of course, this is not definitively a translation from the plate text, because we also find quarters of the land in the Bible, and it is always possible that the term was borrowed from biblical usage. Nevertheless, it fits with the entire system, even if it cannot be probatory of the source of the concept. This conception of the Nephite usage and directional terms helps explain a passage that would otherwise be difficult. The flight of the Lamanite Amlicite army is described in Alma chapter 2, verses 35 to 37. Quote, "And it came to pass that when they had all crossed the river Sidon, that the Lamanites and the Amlicites began to flee before them, notwithstanding that they were so numerous that they could not be numbered. And they fled before the Nephites toward the wilderness, which was west and north, away beyond the borders of the land. And the Nephites did pursue them with their might, and did slay them. Yea, they were met on every hand, and slain and driven, until they were scattered on the west and on the north, until they had reached the wilderness, which was called Hermounts. And it was that part of the wilderness which was infested by wild and ravenous beasts." End quote. In this description, a fleeing army heads both west and north. Because we see northward with some frequency in the Book of Mormon, it could have been used to indicate travel to the northwest. Instead, the text opts for travel both north and west. This is conceptually difficult in the plus style cardinal directions, but quite understandable if the X style quadrants are meant. In that case, they would simply wander back and forth over the conceptual line dividing the west from the northern quarter. Just as with the description given by the Tojolabal speaker, if one were to stand with their left hand to the sun setting during the summer solstice, one would be looking north. And that north corresponds quite nicely to the north that Sorensen suggested. No skewing of north 60 degrees to the west is required. However, it should be noted that it would be a misrepresentation of Nephite directions to use north to indicate only the directions based upon the summer solstice. For the Nephites, north could indicate anything to that side of the sun's path. An inherent misperception of any ancient directional system occurs simply by our attempts to represent them on a map. Our maps take a bird's eye view, and often literally a satellite's view of the land we are interested in. Almost any map we use to describe the Book of Mormon geography assumes an understanding of an area of land much larger than the ancients would have comprehended. Their world was limited to what they could see, travel to, or have described to them. No remaining map created by any Mesoamerican people has any of the details of our modern maps. They are spatially inaccurate and locate landmarks without precise distance interrelationships. The maps place the reader at the center and describe the conceptual bounds of the world in distances that might be a day or two of travel. Combined with differences in terminology and cultural perceptions, it is little wonder that the Book of Mormon directions appear difficult to fit into onto a modern map. That inherent difficulty becomes even greater when we insist upon reading literal geographic statements where the text does not intend a literal reading. That is the issue that clouds our understanding of the Nephite seas. Where are the Nephite Sea East and Sea West? Another possible contraindication for Sorensen's geographic correlation is the relationship of that geography to surrounding areas. Helaman chapter 3, verse 8, clearly mentions four seas. Quote, "And it came to pass that they did multiply and spread, and did go forth from the land southward to the land northward, and did spread insomuch that they began to cover the face of the whole earth, from the sea south to the sea north, from the sea west to the sea east." End quote. Some Book of Mormon geographers therefore insist on identifying four surrounding bodies of water. However, John E. Clarke notes of these seas, quote, "I am convinced that the reference to a sea north and a south sea is devoid of any concrete geographical content. All specific references or allusions to Book of Mormon seas are only to the east and west seas. Any geography that tries to accommodate a north and south sea, I think, is doomed to fail. But we cannot dismiss the reference to these seas out of hand if they are metaphorical. What was the metaphor? Figure 5 shows a conceptualization of Nephite lands. The city of Zarahemla and the lands immediately surrounding it were the center, Helaman chapter 1, verses 24 to 27, or, quote, heart, end quote, Alma chapter 60, verse 19, Helaman chapter 1, verse 18, of the land. The surrounding lands to the various wildernesses were considered quarters of the land, a bountiful quarter, Alma chapter 52, verse 10 and 13, chapter 53, verse 8, chapter 58, verse 35, and a manti quarter, chapter 43, verse 26, chapter 56, 1 through 2 and 9, chapter 58, verse 30, are mentioned. Moroni was another, quote, part, end quote, of the land, Alma chapter 59, verse 6. We lack information on the eastern quarter. My designation of Melech is merely my best guess. We have seen that the Nephite lands were surrounded by wilderness on every side, and conceptually beyond each wilderness lay a sea to the south, north, west, and east. Thus the land was conceived as surrounded by seas or floating on one large sea. The land was divided into a center and four quarters. Each quarter duplicated the others. The quartering of the land was not the way most of us would do it, by making a cross following the cardinal directions, but was a cross shown in figure 3. Such a conception of the world would not be out of place in the Middle East at the time of Lehi, and it is remarkably close to the Mesoamerican view of their world. The main point is that the reference to north and south seas fits nicely into the Mesoamerican scene as part of a metaphor for the whole earth and was probably used in a metaphorical sense in the Book of Mormon." End quote. Clarke's proposal that the north and south seas are metaphorical rather than physical finds an interesting parallel in the metaphorical use of the phrase, quote, "the other side of the sea," end quote, in various Maya documents. Frauke Schoske of the University of Bonn and Alan Christensen of Brigham Young University note that it is a metaphor that, quote, "remains hitherto largely unrecognized because a presumed literalness has obscured its metaphorical interpretation," end quote. They conclude by noting that, quote, "The phrase, the other side of the sea, in colonial sources is only a metaphor for a place of origin in the sense of creation, and not departure, and thus does not necessarily refer to an actual location that could be found on any map," end quote. It is perhaps not coincidental that the metaphorical meaning that Clarke suggests for the sea north and the sea south is also associated with a conceptual organization of the world. As Hopkins and Yoserand worked through the vocabulary terms used for east and west, they presented their reconstruction of what the classic Maya terms might have been. For east and west, they reconstruct both the words and the plausible original meanings. Quote, "Elabkin, the front porch of the house of the sun, where the sun exists, and Okipkin, the door of the house of the sun, where the sun enters," end quote. They argue that these proto-forms may be traced to as early as 2000 BC. In a world conceptually surrounded by seas, the house of the sun would lie across the sea or on, quote, "the other side of the sea," end quote. Thus, Saksa and Christensen explain, quote, "We understand that in the Maya worldview, all creation involves the underlying concept of birth from a primordial sea in darkness. The world came into being because the earth and the mountains arose from the sea and the sky was lifted up from the water. Creation thus involves dawning, the, quote, other side of the, quote, end quote, the other side of the sea, end quote, refers metaphorically to an origin in the conceptual East Sea, the place of dawning and creation. Thus, there was a very strong cultural preference for having a sea east and the parallel sea west. The question is how that conceptual world might have related to the physical seas that the Book of Mormon text requires. In contrast with the metaphorical meanings for sea north and sea south, and the metaphorical meaning associated with the East Sea, the Book of Mormon text clearly supports the physical presence of a sea east. Sorensen's correlation has the expected sea east, but applies that designation to the Gulf of Mexico. Anyone examining a modern map perceives the Gulf of Mexico to be north of the land surrounding the Isthmus of Tehuantepec. How can this body of water in the north be the sea east? In Sorensen's correlation, this is part of the skewing of directions. I suggest that no skewing is necessary, only the application of the principle of Mesoamerican directions. The first important part of the explanation is the Mesoamerican concept of the center. Any directions given in the Book of Mormon necessarily related to some location that is conceptually the center of the world for those who live there. Directions related to a different center might result in different directions being placed in the direction quadrants. We can see the same principle even in our modern directional system. We may describe Denver as being in the east when we are located in Salt Lake City, but in the west when we are located in St. Louis. What is in the east or west depends upon the vantage point from which we view the direction. I suppose that the term, quote, sea east, end quote, is a description rather than a name, and that two different bodies of water might have been considered the sea east based upon the different center points from which they are described. The original Nephite center point was not Zarahemla, but rather the city of Nephi. In Sorensen's correlation, we have the highland city of Guatemala as a plausible land of Nephi. From that center, the East Sea would be right where the several Book of Mormon geographers suggest, off the coast of modern Belize. From that original center point, the Nephites would then have had the option of calling the Pacific either the Sea West or Sea South, since it creates the coastline that would be both south and west of the land of Nephi. Because the definition of Mesoamerican direction systems had the sun setting in the Sea East, Sea West, it is logical that they would have selected that designation for what we know as the Pacific Ocean. The interesting combination of the sea west being both west and south helps explain Alma chapter 53, verse 22. Quote, "And now it came to pass that Helaman did march at the head of his 2,000 stripling soldiers to support of the people in the borders of the land on the south by the West Sea," end quote. The land south of Zarahemla bordered the West Sea, not a South Sea, even though there was a coastline on the south. While there is a reference to a sea east from the land of Nephi, most references to the sea east come from the time when directions were given in relation to the city of Bountiful, not the city of Nephi or even the city of Zarahemla. Using Sorensen's correlation, Bountiful would be located at the northern side of the isthmus of Tehuantepec. With that location as the center point, the Gulf of Mexico lies both on the north and on the east. Just as the cultural necessity of the sun rising across a sea east and setting in the sea west allowed the Nephites to define a sea west from the center point of the city of Nephi, that same cultural preference would naturally select sea east as the appropriate designation of that major body of water. No skewing of directions is necessary to see the Gulf of Mexico as the sea east based on the perspective of Bountiful as the center. Regardless of the body of water, the sea east existed as a description that was related to the cosmological understanding of the east as a place of creation and of the rising birth of the sun. In the Book of Mormon, it is plausible that two different bodies of water served that function and were designated, not named, sea east to conform to the cosmological principle. The land northward and the land southward. There is another feature of the Book of Mormon that may be plausibly related to an underlying Mesoamerican directional system. The vast majority of the times we see either the word northward or southward in the Book of Mormon. They are descriptive of a place, not of movement. They refer to the land northward and the land southward. The term northward only appears three times as a description of motion, and southward only twice. Eastward occurs three times, always an indication of direction of travel, and westward does not occur at all. The phrases land northward, land southward can parallel the functions of the north-south spatial orientation markers, but they are textually distinct from them. We find in 3 Nephi chapter 6 verse 2, quote, "And it came to pass that they had not eaten up all their provisions. Therefore they did take with them all that they had not devoured, of all their grain of every kind, and their gold, and their silver, and all their precious things. And they did return to their own lands and their possessions, both on the north and on the south, both on the land northward and on the land southward." End quote. There is no reason to indicate the spatial orientation twice, and the reference here clearly separates the land from the spatial orientation. The two lands conceptually meet along a dividing line. Quote, "Thus the land on the northward was called Desolation, and the land on the southward was called Bountiful, it being the wilderness which is filled with all manner of wild beasts of every kind, a part of which had come from the land northward for food." End quote. Alma chapter 22, verse 31. When the land northward has a name, it is Desolation. When the land southward has a name, it is Bountiful. They are adjacent lands. Land northward and Desolation are interchangeable labels, as are land southward and Bountiful. The obvious conceptual inversion of Desolation-Bountiful suggests that there is another aspect of Mesoamerican direction systems in play. Prudence M. Rice indicates that each of the four conceptual directions had other attributes. Quote, "Along the lowland Maya, among the lowland Maya, this solar basis for naming directions is evident by incorporating K'in, sun, into the term. East, Lak'in, was associated with sunrise, birth, and the color red, Chak, while west, Chik'un, and Ukchin was associated with sunset, death, and the color black, Ek. By contrast, Ixamen, north, was associated with up, as in the sun at zenith, the sun god's right side on his journey, heavens, the number 13, the place of ancestors, and the color white, Suk. Nochul, south, was associated with down, or the sun's nadir, the sun's left, the underworld, the number 9, night, death of the sun and its underworld journey back to the east, and the color yellow, Ka'atn. End quote. Although the association between north and right is common, it is not universal. David Stewart indicates, quote, "The south glyph is widely thought to read Nohul. The word for south in Yucatecan language attested also in Chontal and Cholti. The low suffix on a south glyph written in Naj Tunik cave offers good support for this reading. The root of the term is no, which has the related meaning of large, great, principal, or right side. The no reading seems fitting in the context of the hand terms on Tikal's Mercador. The first glyph of the pair would simply read Nok Ka'ab, a widespread and familiar term in Mayan languages for right hand." End quote. In the case Stewart describes, the orientation that leads to the terms for north and south is based on facing the sun rather than from the perspective of the sun. It appears that there were two possible methods of deriving a term for north or south, both based on the same principle, but from either facing the sun or from the sun's perspective. On that light, Hopkins and Yosarand note that the data from the later Mexica, who were Nahuatl speakers, Quote, while classical Nahuatl was a mythological reference to the place of death as the base of north, one variety of modern Nahuatl makes an association of south, for which no term is recorded, as sinister, left-handed, and regards north as positive and right-handed, while calling it downslope. End quote. As with the data for Mayan languages, the Nahuatl languages also demonstrate a reversal of the handedness of north and south. There are strong indications that there was a similar bad-good perception about left-right, and therefore north-south, which shared those terms among the classic Maya as there was in the classical Nahuatl. Objects to the left of the viewer are consistently of lower status than those on the right. Maya epigraphers Stephen Houston, David Stewart, and Carl Taub note, quote, consistently the right hand is straight, correct, large, or fine, pure, and decorated, adorned, in K'iche, while the left hand is not quite obedient and thus, as in colonial Yucatec, ill-behaved, graceless, or clumsy, like a cloven hoof, and in K'iche, mux Akab, crazy hand. End quote. In a spatial relation system that uses the right-left hand designation for the terms we call south and north, it is not surprising at all that the Nephites used a word for left hand north that would have had a pejorative association. That was mirrored by the favorable association of right hand south, that the land northward was also associated with a dead Jaredite culture simply vindicated the pejorative association. This gives us a very simple explanation for why the land northward is desolation and the land southward is bountiful. The labels replicate the cultural perception of the spatial relationships based upon one facing the rising sun and indicate that the Nephite preference was to associate left-north similar to the Mayan languages of Yucatec, Chontal, and Cholti. Conclusion. The most serious contraindication for Sorensen's correlation between Mesoamerica and the Book of Mormon has been his apparent shifting of north some 60 degrees to the west. The quality of the correlations with the rest of the geography and the cultural data suggest that we look to Mesoamerica to see if the cultural data from the region in which the Book of Mormon took place, according to this correlation, might provide an understanding of what has come to be called Nephite North, though it is not a term Sorensen used. The combination of the Mesoamerican center and the perception of the quadrants as wedges emanating for that center explain how the Book of Mormon North might include a region that our cultural predisposition for cardinal directions would not recognize. Combined with the shifting center points from which directions or spatial relationships may be discussed, we have culturally appropriate understanding the underlying plate text directions that yielded the English translations of north, south, east, and west. In addition to explaining the spatial terms, it also provides a cultural underpinning for why the land northward was desolation and land southward bountiful. Sorensen's geographic correlation not only remains the best supported, but what has been a directional conundrum actually provides further indication that the plate text was written in a region steeped in Mesoamerican understanding of spatial orientation. This has been a recording of From the East to the West, The Problem of Directions in the Book of Mormon by Brant A. Gardner, originally published in Interpreter, A Journal of Mormon Scripture, Volume 3, 2013, pages 119 through 153, read by Scott Dunaway. A printed version of this and many other articles and resources on Mormon Scripture can be found at MormonInterpreter.com.